It's time for the Ron and Brian podcast. Get ready to fill your ears with the latest news, politics, current events, and whatever else we feel like talking about this week. And now, your hosts, Ron and Brian.
All right. Welcome, everybody. It is Sunday night. It is 8 o'clock, and that means it is time for the Ron and Brian podcast, episode 180, to be exact. I know, started at the bottom. Now we're here. Brian, how the hell are you this week, my friend?
I am hungover.
Hungover? Why is that?
Just wait for my beef of the week.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Also, apologies for last week. I know, this broadcast has become standard fare for many people out there. And there was a bit of a glitch in our streaming last week due to our provider kind of screwing things up. Needless to say, people have been yelled at. People have been called on the carpet. Firings were offered. We did not take them. We don't want people to lose their jobs right around the holidays. Clearly, we are back online, live, and ready to bring you the entertainment that you have come to love and so richly deserve. So, Brian, should we just get right into this?
I think we have to get right into it.
All right. Let's start it off with Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week.
Salud.
Drink of the Week.
Slasher.
Who's?
Drink of the Week. Drink of the Week. Drink of the Week.
All right, Brian, nothing to cure a hangover like a little hair of the dog that bit you. What did you bring to drink this evening?
From our good friends over at Equilibrium Brewery in New York, you are looking at a can of the Alleyway Brew, made in collaboration with New York hardcore legend Sick of It All. Alleyway Brew has a healthy dose of white wheat, flaked oats, and a large dry hop of Nelson with Hop Revolution and Citra. Does any of that make sense to me? Absolutely not. What it does do is it pours an extremely vibrant, opaque yellow with potent flavors of tangerine, passion fruit, mango, and Riesling grape.
All right, let's hit it up, see what you think.
Nice.
That's not a bad IPA.
All right, good. Good to hear. I'm happy for you.
Ron, what have you got?
All right, I'm going back to our friends from Imprint Beer in Hatfield, Pennsylvania. I had a beer of theirs last week because they're the ones that introduced Brian to lactose in beers, and we will be forever thankful. But I'm trying a little bit more of a traditional beer. I don't usually get scared over a beer, Brian, but I'm a little scared this week because we have the Throat Sith beer right here. This is an Imperial Stout with Carolina Reaper peppers.
Whoa!
It clocks in at 12%, so it's pretty heavy. And on the side, it says, warning, extremely hot. So I have not tried this beer before. This may or may not be a good idea, but let's try it. Throat Sith from Imprint Beer.
I'm nervous. Now you've got me nervous.
I mean, it's tasty. It's a good stout. And there comes the heat. The heat's coming.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's not, I mean, it's definitely hot. Like you would, it's peppery. I mean, I will definitely feel bad about ingesting these peppers tomorrow. Oh yeah, no, there's heat.
Sure.
Yeah, now there's heat. The mouth is tingling. The tongue is burning a little bit. This will not be a good beer to drink while doing a podcast. But regardless, I have made my bed and I must lie in it. As we know, we have to finish the beers we bring for Drink of the Week, regardless of how it may impact us. But tasty beer if you do like if you like spiciness, if you like peppers, and if you like a good Imperial Stout, it is good on a number of levels.
There you go. That sounds excellent. Ooh. If you start sweating, if you pass out at any moment, just realize that the show just is going to continue to stream.
I understand. So that may or may not get us additional viewers. I feel like if I passed out, that might be, there's a segment of the population that would enjoy that.
I think the only segment of that population is currently downstairs in your home.
Very true. Very, very true.
I think the rest of the world would mourn your loss. Your wife, on the other hand, I don't think she
would. So much. I got you. No. All right. Let's keep things going with this week in racism.
This
week
in
racism.
That's burning. So, but anyway, the racism must go on. Last week, we had kind of a light week in racism. We are kind of back on track with two pages of racism this week. And of course, Brian, what is the one thing that we can always count on whenever we have a This Week in Racism right after Halloween?
Oh, no. Bad costumes.
Not only bad costumes, Brian, but people deciding to dress in blackface. Point. Brevard firefighter Jake Johnson is under investigation. He's on the left in the photo here after a Halloween photo showed him in blackface. Brevard County spokesperson Don Walker confirmed that Johnson is one of their firefighter paramedics at Station 63 in Indianatic. Johnson has been with the department for 16 years, and now the county is investigating him. The caption for the photo said he was dressed up as Denzel Washington, while another man in blackface was portraying O.J. Simpson. The woman in the photo, the daughter of a firefighter, has since taken her social media pages down and apologized on another comment wall, saying that she did not know about blackface or its offensive history.
That's bullshit.
And that's just, it's just lazy costume. Like, there's nothing on the left that says Denzel Washington. This is a man who literally just wanted to dress up in blackface.
Wow.
And he has gone off the grid, too. They tried to interview him, and he apparently is on vacation and was unavailable for comment.
Shocking.
A special task force created by the Beverly Hills Police Department to crack down on crime along its iconic Rodeo Drive is under fire for overwhelmingly arresting black shoppers during its two-month existence. Records obtained by the LA Times found that of the 90 people arrested by the department's Rodeo Drive team in 2020, 80 of them were black. The newspaper's findings come after civil rights attorney Ben Crump and LA-based attorney Bradley Gage filed a lawsuit on behalf of two of the people arrested by the special team of officers on allegations of racial profiling. An Alabama ethics court removed a state probate judge from office after he was accused of violating several ethics guidelines, including making various racist and sexist remarks in the workplace. Judge Randy Jinks was suspended in March after more than 100 allegations against him were detailed in a 78-page document issued by the state's Judicial Inquiry Commission. The commission's complaint detailed accusations of racist and sexist conversations that employees claim Jinks initiated, including talking about pornography and a video of a woman doing a striptease. Some of the employees alleged that Jinks, who is white, also made disparaging remarks about George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter movement, black people who came into the office, and the office's sole black employee. That employee, Darius Pearson, has testified that in May 2019, when Jinks saw his new car, he said that he, as a judge, couldn't afford one, but asked, quote, "What are you doing, selling drugs?" Jinks is deciding whether he should appeal the decision before Alabama's Supreme Court. In Connersville, Indiana, the FBI is now investigating a fire that broke out at Connersville City Councilman Tommy Williams' home as a possible hate crime due to someone painting a racial slur on the back porch. The fire started around 3:30 a.m. while Williams was in Germany and his wife was on a trip into Florida. After the fire was put out, it was found that someone had spray painted the N-word in foot-high letters on the back patio. A juror in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial was dismissed for making a joke about the Jacob Blake shooting. The joke was, quote, "Why did it take 7 shots to shoot Jacob Blake? Because they ran out of bullets." And the juror told the joke to a deputy while being escorted to his car. Blake, who is black, was left paralyzed after he was shot in the back 7 times in front of his children by white Kenosha, Wisconsin officer Rustin Shesky last August. The judge called the juror into court for questioning, where he confirmed he told the joke but declined to repeat it. Both the defense and the prosecution agreed to dismiss the juror, and the judge admonished him while doing so. An assailant told a woman to go back to China and slugged her in the back of the head in an unprovoked Lower Manhattan attack last week. The 26-year-old victim was unloading luggage from a car on Hudson Street near Dominic Street in Hudson Square around 3:30 p.m. on Halloween when a woman came up behind her and said, "Get out of Chinatown, go back to China," according to authorities. Then the suspect punched the woman in the back of the head and fled on foot. The NYPD's Hate Crimes Task Force is investigating the incident. And on Thursday, ESPN dropped a bombshell report accusing Phoenix Suns owner Robert Sarver of racist and sexist behavior. They interviewed more than 70 former and current employees who've worked for the Suns since he bought the team in 2004. After a loss to the Golden State Warriors in 2016, Sarver approached head coach Earl Watson in the locker room and allegedly said, quote, "Why does Draymond Green get to run up and down the court and say N-word?" repeating the N-word several times in a row. When Watson, who is Black and Hispanic, told Sarver he couldn't say that, Sarver replied, "Why? Draymond Green says N-word." Some told ESPN that he has used racially insensitive language repeatedly in the office. Employees recounted conduct they felt was inappropriate and misogynistic, including Sarver once passing around a picture of his wife in a bikini to employees and speaking about times his wife performed oral sex on him. Some said the longtime owner fostered an environment in which employees felt like they were his property, even once asking one woman whether he, quote, owned her to determine whether she worked for the Suns. In the wake of the report, the NBA announced that they would be opening up an investigation into Sarver and the Phoenix Suns organization. And we've got one story in Racism Rewind.
Racism Rewind.
And we've been following the story of Ronald Green, a Black motorist who died following his arrest by the Louisiana State Police for failing to stop for a traffic violation. Police initially claimed that Green died from images he got in a car crash, which came under question when body camera footage was obtained and released by the Associated Press, showing Green being stunned, punched, and dragged by Louisiana state troopers. The violence caught on body cam prompted the FBI to revisit the autopsy report done by the Union Parish coroner. The original report corroborated the state police's story, but the new review removes the crash from the list of causes of death in Green's original autopsy. The federal civil rights investigation into Green's death will continue, along with other cases of Louisiana State Police beating Black motorists during arrests. And that is This Week in Racism.
Ugh.
I didn't put a timer on that, but I feel we kept it under 10 minutes still.
It's just depressing.
Apparently this is not a beer to drink when you're going to be talking a lot, because the pepper kind of goes down the back of your throat, and it was a little much. I'm not going to lie. Let me get a little water here.
Now, let me ask you a question. What was your logic in drinking this during the show when you know you're going to be doing a lot of talking?
Well, you know, I've had a number of beers that are pepper based or steeped in peppers, and they typically are not that spicy. Like they always say, oh, this is a hot beer. And even the guy said, oh, you know, if you like spicy food, you should be okay. This is spicier than I was anticipating.
Ron, this beer came with a warning. There's a warning on the side of the can.
Muy caliente.
You can't act like you can't just be like, really?
All right. Well, I'm going to let you talk for a bit. Here's Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's bothering you this week?
My inability to sometimes drink responsibly.
Okay, I'm open to hearing this. I want to hear this story.
Last night I attended a friend's birthday party in Manhattan. It was a rooftop of a famous hotel. I did not eat dinner before attending the party.
Okay.
I just thought I would eat at the party. I ended up not eating at the party. What I ended up doing was I ended up having probably, I would say, about three or four glasses of red wine, at which point I moved on to gin and tonics.
Ooh, okay.
Which I probably had another four of those.
Was there not food available at the party?
There was food. It was all the way on the other side. I did have like a couple. It was like a finger food.
Okay.
It was like little mini sliders and whatnot. I woke up this morning having zero memory of how I got home. Zero memory of why I have a cut on my knee. Why I have a soreness in both knees. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I appear to have lost my jacket.
Okay.
I brought my jacket with me. It is not here.
I mean, as someone who has walked alongside you while you were drunk, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably fell and hit your knees. Causing the pain and the cut on the one knee.
I was given a ride home. I did not fall in their presence. So I literally fell from the front of my building at my bed. Somewhere in there, I fell and landed on both knees. And I woke up with a splitting headache.
You know, it's tough to hang when you get to our age. Like you can't do it like you used to.
So my beef of the week is my inability to drink responsibly all the time.
All right. That's fair. I hope teachable moment. I hope that this will be
teachable moment. Absolutely teachable moment. Ron, what's bothering you?
It'll probably be
other than your throat.
My beef next week probably will be me having chosen to drink this beer. My beef this week, Brian, is with the proliferation of Christmas music and movies already.
It's already hitting you.
On Sirius XM, all of their holiday music channels are now active. Right after Halloween, they took the Halloween channels, boom, sure. Dropped the holiday music channels. And also Lifetime and Hallmark Channel already showing their Christmas movies on Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Now,
of course.
If you know my wife loves Christmas movies.
Does she really?
Oh, yeah. Two specific. The Holiday with Jude Law, Cameron Diaz, Jack Black, and Kate Winslet. And Love Actually with a bunch of people I don't remember. But those are movies that whenever they are on, she just turns them on and leaves them on. So The Holiday, I think, played twice, two or three times this weekend. And then something called the Ghost of Ex-Boyfriend's Past, which was apparently a Hallmark Channel special one. And there was some other one, too. But so she doesn't pay attention to movies when she watches them. So she's like, oh, what's the story here? And I'd be like, well, this person is analyzing their life to figure out why they can't be in a good relationship, only to realize the person they loved has been right in front of them the entire time. She's like, right. How do you know that's the plot? Because that is the plot of all of these movies.
Yes, yes.
Like within the first 5 minutes, I'm like, all right, she's going to fall in love with the goofball brother that is part of the family business. And they will raise the three orphan children that have suddenly been shoehorned into the story together.
I always got hit with the evil real estate developer from the big city who shows up to the small town because he's wants to make profiting off of real estate in the town,
right.
And then falls in love in the town. And by the woman that works at the general store, right. She's like a waitress, something, but falls in love. And then realizes that they do not want to ruin the town.
That's right. And everybody is happy at the end. And there's hot cocoa involved. There is bonfires.
Yep.
There's a little bit of conflict because at the end, there's always the misunderstanding that the real estate developer is still going to go through with the deal to screw over the town. And he's like, no, I tried to get that deal shut down. You know what? I'm selling my company.
Yes. And there's also a complete lack of minorities on in those. Oh, yeah. It's so painfully white.
Although
it is painfully white.
Credit to the ghost of ex-boyfriend's past. That was a primarily Indian cast, Indian American cast.
Really?
Not cast like C-A-S-T-E.
Sure.
Hierarchy.
The cast Ooh, you just bailed yourself out on that one because I was about to come after you.
You're going to cancel
one me? One does not make an Indian culture joke, a pun, if you would, and get away with it.
All right. Let's
not
see.
Not here.
Let's get into the meat of the podcast. Let's get to the news. So some vaccine updates. The U.S. has given final clearance to COVID-19 shots for kids 5 to 11. They have okayed the Pfizer vaccine, paving the way for an estimated 28 million young children to be able to get their shots as soon as this upcoming week.
I encourage all children to go out and get vaccinated.
Even if it is Pfizer, the silver standard, sure. And not Moderna.
The gold standard.
But yeah, so it is good to see that kids have the ability. Is it okay if we announce that we received our booster shots of Moderna this past week?
It's possible.
So we are back.
How do you feel,
top.
Ron? How do you feel?
Today I feel good. I'm not going to lie. So the first two shots of Moderna earlier this year really
the gold standard.
I did not have any symptoms whatsoever. Yesterday, so I got the shot at around 3 on Friday. So okay. Morning yesterday, I felt okay. I was watching TV and got up off of the couch. And at that point, I realized every joint in my body ached.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's what they're talking about when they say side effects. And just felt run down and just in pain. So just basically hung out all day. Didn't do a hell of a lot. Woke up this morning feeling perfectly fine.
Good. I got my shot on Wednesday. And on Friday, I went to bed at 7 p.m. and woke up at 7 a.m.
So you just slept it off.
Slept that shit off. Literally 2 days later. I was just feeling so... I felt very weak and just run down, tired.
But now so, I feel strong. I feel, again, like I have the strength of 10 men.
Ron, I feel like I could go into a COVID ward without a mask on and kiss everyone there. I feel so protected. I feel so safe.
Would you do that on Instagram Live?
Do I have to? Or
no, but I mean, it would be good. I think it's good social media clout.
Oh, then I would definitely do it.
All right.
For social media cloud, I would do it. Again, we've got three shots of the gold standard flowing through our veins.
I feel like it would fight even other diseases. I don't fear Ebola anymore. I don't fear the Spanish flu. That is how good Moderna is, in my opinion.
It is. I just wish that the kids could get it.
Yes. The World Health Organization also this week granted emergency authorization to Covaxin, the first coronavirus vaccine developed in India. It apparently has a 78% efficacy rate. Also, apparently, a lot easier to store than some of these other vaccines, having a shelf life of up to 12 months from the date of manufacture. Prime Minister Modi of India stating that they should be able to produce over 5 billion vaccines overall to help the world fight the pandemic. This is also a two-shot vaccine with one shot 4 weeks after the initial shot. Brian, how would you rate Covaxin again, Moderna, gold standard? How would you rate Covaxin against Pfizer, J&J, and AstraZeneca?
I believe it's better than J&J. I believe it's better than Sinovac. I believe it's better than the Sputnik vaccine. I do not believe that it compares to the silver standard Pfizer or Moderna.
The gold standard.
Gold standard.
I think that it's up there. However, I mean, let's face it. They've got billions of people over there to vaccinate. I think they've got to be happy with 78%.
And there was one time during the year that it was a wasteland in areas of India where they were literally burning bodies because people were such a large number of people were dying from COVID at one point earlier this year.
They were in a pretty bad spot.
New Zealand, gangs in New Zealand apparently are joining forces to take on COVID-19. Seven Good. Leaders across four prominent posses are featured in a new campaign video asking their gang members to go out and get vaccinated against the coronavirus. The four-minute video featured Dennis O'Reilly of the Black Power Gang, who said he's taken a few shots since he joined at 19 years old, including two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine, and asked his community to do the same. So if the gangs of New Zealand can put aside their differences, why can't we as Americans do that?
Because we've become a shit show.
Very true. Very true. Now, this is interesting. The population of New Zealand, a little over 5 million people, only 3,600 cases of COVID in New Zealand since the start.
Really? Oh, that's because they're an island.
Well, they locked down like right at the beginning. Like they were one of the ones where they were like, you know what? This is serious. We're not going to let anybody in. We're going to close mm-hmm. all of our businesses. The government's going to take care of everybody. And right. they basically at one point had eradicated COVID and only reintroduced it when they opened up their borders again.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
And so you mean this is something that could have been handled well?
You would think if there was a more proactive effort in certain countries that the numbers would not have jumped up as much as they did.
Interesting. Very interesting. I'm surprised by that.
I know this is going to upset you, Brian, because
you know me. I do not like being upset.
You told me, you have your Disney Plus membership and you were thinking about canceling it. And you said to me, Ron, the only reason I'm not canceling Disney Plus is because I watched season one of the Mighty Ducks TV show and it touched my heart.
So good.
I need to wait and see when is season two of Mighty Ducks coming around. Well, Brian,
they're going to announce it soon, correct?
But it will be without Emilio Estevez because he has decided not to return because he would not comply with the show's vaccination policy.
Emilio Estevez is making a stand on the COVID vaccine?
Apparently. And so Disney decided not to pick up his option for its second season when he did not assure the company that he would run out and get himself vaccinated.
Wait a second. So they're not doing the entire series because of him?
They haven't said it yet. They may attempt to continue to do the second season without him. Now, there are also sources that are saying that creative differences might have been a factor and that he may not actually have not wanted to get vaccinated, but because of creative differences, that might have been an easy way for him to get out of his contract.
Time out here.
Yes.
We're talking about the Mighty Ducks TV show.
Yes.
There's nothing creative about that. So there's absolutely no way that anybody could have creative differences if there's nothing creative about the product you're putting out.
And also,
Let me guess. It's about kids playing hockey.
And apart from the Mighty Ducks franchise, tell me something Emilio Estevez has been in, besides 2.5 Men doing some guest star roles with his brother. Name something Emilio Estevez has been in the last 20 years.
Breakfast Club. What was that movie where he was a garbage man? What was the movie where he was in the garbage man thing?
I think that was a little more than 20 years ago. That was in like the 90s.
So you're saying, are you accusing Emilio Estevez of not being relevant?
I'm saying, when the parts come along as few and in between as they have for him, perhaps he should try and keep the jobs that he has.
Well, that's really hurtful.
Listen, we can't always be nice, Brian.
My keyboard just died.
Look at what's that?
My keyboard battery just died.
You are not having a good day. just a rough weekend altogether.
Lost my jacket.
Also,
lost my freaking jacket.
The world of COVID and the NFL collided this week when it was announced that Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers was tested positive for COVID, which would require him sitting out of today's game against the Kansas City Chiefs. But then it really blew up when people found out that he was unvaccinated. Someone had asked a question and he had made a statement that he was immunized. No one really asked a follow-up question at that point to clarify. But yes, it turns out that Aaron Rodgers is amongst the group of unvaccinated players in the NFL. He then went on to do an interview on the Pat McAfee show.
Do we have any idea who Pat McAfee is?
Pat McAfee was the punter for the Indianapolis Colts. And he has since gone on to he's done some color commentary for the game.
Really?
He's actually did a stint with the WWE in NXT for a while. I mean, he can be a very entertaining guy. He's a good talker, good on the microphone. And so he's done this podcast, the Pat McAfee Show, for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently has, developed some sort of relationship with Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers, while trying to distance himself from like the flat earthers and anti-vaxxers of the world, then also repeated a number of anti-vaxxer talking points during this interview.
What I found really interesting was this. So he, earlier in the season, he gets asked a question. Instead of saying, "I am not vaccinated," he gives the answer that he's been immunized. Then test positive for COVID.
Right.
He's not feeling well. Test positive for COVID. Oh, and by the way, this is after he has carried himself on following the guidelines of the NFL as if he were a vaccinated person. So apparently if you are a vaccinated person, you do not need to wear a mask.
He was saying that. So again, this, his statement was that his teammates knew that he was not vaccinated, that he followed the appropriate protocols when at the facilities and working out and everything else, as far as when to be masked and testing and things of that nature. But the NFL is going to open an investigation into the Packers organization and see if
that's
actually the case.
Because I read that was not the case. But then he tests positive and is put on the sidelines by the league based on him having being an unvaccinated status, which is that what is it, 10 days you said earlier?
Yes, 10 days.
Whereas if you are vaccinated and you test positive, I think you go for a much shorter period of time. So that
all you
let
have
the
to
world
do is you just need two negative tests in a row. So there's not a time frame that you have to sit out. You just have to wait until you can test a negative for 2 days in a row.
So I would need to take two different syphilis tests.
Exactly.
Okay. But the point is the fact that he was he reportedly was furious that his vaccination status had become public.
Right. And so he's a notoriously private individual. I mean, that's been kind of his thing. Let's face it, he's a bit of an asshole. Like, I think anybody who has interviewed him or talked to him, he's kind of an asshole. But again, not illegal to be an asshole in this country.
No. But then he runs to this show where he decides that instead of just saying, "Listen, I don't want to do it. I don't believe that I should be forced to do something I don't want to do. So I'm going to sit out. I will get better." He immediately seized upon the, "I'm the victim.
Right.
I'm the martyr. Everybody should feel bad for me." Immediately starts bringing up woke culture as if that has anything to do with his situation. The only reason he's doing this interview is because he's trying to spin the story so that it doesn't come across like he is a liar. So he's trying to save his reputation. And nowadays, the best way to do that is to just immediately position yourself as being the victim, and it just go, and just start attacking people who have absolutely nothing and have done nothing against you.
Right.
The woke culture has nothing. Like, I don't even understand what that had to do with Aaron Rodgers.
That's the thing. If you listen to some of his argument, so you know his statement was that he has an allergy to a component of the two mRNA vaccines, to Pfizer and Moderna.
The right.
Standard. While he didn't say what he's allergic to, the assumption is it's something called polyethylene glycol, which is kind of a stabilizer they use in these vaccines. And it can, in a very small percentage of people, cause anaphylaxis. So, you know, it's 2 to 5 people per million people vaccinated. So it is a very, very small thing. But okay. You're an NFL player. Your health is important. You're getting towards the end of the career. You're making a lot of money. Fine. As far as Johnson & Johnson, you know, he brought up the fact that there was the time when J&J was taken off the market due to blood clots. All right.
Sure.
Fine.
What was the likelihood of blood clots for the Johnson & Johnson?
Again, a very small.
Very small.
Yes. But that being said, you know, why not be more forthcoming about it? And again, he said my health team looked all this stuff over. Again, yeah, he probably has a fairly extensive team of doctors and physicians and whatever. But you know, when you go on this thing, well, now the woke mob wants to cancel me, and then he starts quoting Martin Luther King, and just if you were a white person, don't quote Martin Luther King, just don't. Right. Like, it's correct. so bad. And the other thing,
you're not gonna get any new friends.
The other thing people pointed out, which is kind of funny, I don't know if you noticed the t-shirt he was wearing during the interview.
No, I did not notice it.
So it was a t-shirt. It was Val Kilmer from Tombstone playing Doc Holliday. So it was based off of that character. And where everybody pointed out, well, yeah, appropriate since Doc Holliday died of a respiratory disease when he was 36 years old. He had tuberculosis and died from it. So everyone was like, I don't know if Aaron Rodgers really understands what he's doing there.
Right, right. Yeah, it just came across very tone deaf, and it also really just it came across as somebody who got caught and needed to wanted the world to feel bad for them.
Yeah. And listen, I'm not going to argue why he felt he didn't feel the need to take it, but it's like to be less than forthcoming about not being vaccinated, and then to just blame this outcry that came out because, you know, he tested positive. Like, all right, here's the thing. Yes, you are free to make decisions about your own body, but with the understanding right. that, you know, you may have to just deal with how people respond to that. When people find out that, you know, the things that you've done.
Yeah.
And he did actually lose a sponsorship because of it. Previa Health ended their partnership. It was supposed to be going on for another 2 years. And obviously, Previa Health is on the side of getting vaccinated. So they decided
obviously
to exit out of that agreement. Now, what will be interesting is, you know, Aaron Rodgers has said that, you know, his teammates knew, his teammates supported him, all of that. But
sure, you know, sure.
So the Packers lost today. They lost 13-7 to the Chiefs they were 3-4. Now they're 4-4. That was a very winnable game for the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers were 7-1. Now they're 7-2. So that puts them half a game behind the Rams, puts them a full game behind the Arizona Cardinals. So what will be interesting to see is if we get towards the end of the season. And again, he will clear on Saturday. So he won't have a full week of practice. So there's no guarantee that he will start or be at full efficiency this Sunday. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how his teammates react. If this impacts a playoff seeding, if this impacts a bye week, you know, if they end up being a 3 or 4 seed and get knocked out of the playoffs versus, you know, players thinking that they could have been a 1 or 2 seed if it wasn't for him being unvaccinated. You know, it'll be interesting to see how much support he gets from his teammates. Because the other thing they pointed out is he held out at the beginning of the year because he felt the team wasn't doing everything that it could to be successful this season.
Right, right.
And then you find out, well, you technically didn't weren't do doing it. Everything yeah. you could to ensure the team is successful this season.
Well, I got a kick out of the reference that he made that he called his good friend Joe Rogan for advice on what on how he should be treating his COVID because don't go to medical experts.
Right.
Go to Joe Rogan. Go to a stand-up comedian. Go to the guy who hosted Fear Factor. And say to that guy,
you just talked about how your medical team has gotten you 500 pages of research. And then you're like, well, you know what? I rang up Joe Rogan, who's a good friend of mine now.
No, he knew exactly what he was doing. He,
oh, yeah, he hit a lot of dog whistles towards that side of the spectrum.
Yeah, fuck him. He can go fuck himself.
See, also in the NFL, I mean, it was a rough week in the NFL. Las Vegas Raiders player Henry Ruggs III was driving drunk in his Corvette down a residential street, apparently hitting upwards of 156 miles per hour when he rear-ended a 23-year-old woman in a Toyota RAV4. It hit her car so severely that it severed the gas line, causing the car to burst into flames, killing the woman and her dog as well.
So, that's okay. First off, you should not be driving when you are twice the legal limit.
Yeah, he was 0.16.
He was 0.16. Then, and I'm sure that this has something to do with the alcohol, but why the fuck is he driving 156 miles an hour?
And he apparently managed to apply the brakes, but he had only slowed down to 127 miles an hour when he hit the car and his airbags deployed.
That's bad.
And then the mother of his child is in the passenger seat. She suffered a severe arm injury and had to go, through surgery. And of course, he walks away relatively, injury free. His neck was in a brace, but I mean, I don't know that he necessarily needed any treatment. So he has been charged with DUI resulting in death and reckless driving. The first charge carries a penalty of 2 to 20 years. Reckless driving is up to 6 additional. I believe they tacked on 2 additional charges.
Couple more.
Week. And obviously the Raiders released him hours later. He had been their 2020 mm-hmm. first round draft pick. It's a sad story, for a lot of reasons. It's a young kid who made a mistake, and it's a mistake that literally is going to ruin his life, and it ended someone else's life.
Yeah, absolutely. It affected a lot of people. Stupid juvenile decision. I don't know why he would jeopardize so many different things.
It's and what is a terrible what is especially decision. Frustrating whenever you see something like this involving an NFL player and driving while intoxicated is the NFL pays for a car service for all of its players. If a player has had too much to drink, there is literally wherever they are at. They can reach out to a car service. We're not talking Uber or Lyft or anything like that. They will have, they will have a car sent to them and bring them home. And this is provided. This is part of their contract. This is part of the deal with the NFL because the NFL does not want these things to happen.
Right.
So, it's even dumber knowing that you have that available to you. Again, you're a first round draft pick. You've got millions in the bank, so you can't afford to take a car, but the NFL is going to pay for this for you. And you ignore that.
Real shame. It's just the fact that he hit this car at 100. And there's video of this car just absolutely on fire. So, From what I read, that this woman survived the crash, but died in the fire. you could hear her screaming.
Right.
As the car blew up. I don't know. It didn't blow up, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Became a flame.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a sad story for a lot of reasons. And, you know, again, it just, hopefully it's a learning experience for other NFL players
How does a car get on fire in an accident?
So apparently because he hit her in the back end and he hit her so hard, somehow either the gas tank got punctured or the gas line got knocked loose. And, you know, if that gas hits like a hot engine or you know, anything like that, it's going to go up in flames very easily. And
really?
I did not know that.
I thought it needed a spark of some type.
Yeah. Again, because that just goes to show you how hard he hit it, because most cars, you know, up to a certain, you know, type, you know, certain impact, you know, that gas tank is designed to not do that. And again, he hit it so hard, it was almost like a missile hitting the back of that car.
Fucking scary. Absolutely scary.
But Brian, you know, there's only one story in the NFL that people were talking more about this week. And that was you going 2-0 again in your NFL of the week. Last week, you saw Baltimore playing Minnesota. They were favored by 6. You're like, you know what? I think Baltimore can win the game. I think 6 is a little high. Sure enough, Baltimore finishes strong in overtime, winning 34-31 right at the end of overtime. And then you've got Raiders -2.5 going to play your New York Giants. You're like, you know what? I like the way the Giants have been playing. The Raiders obviously having a tough week due to the Henry Ruggs situation. I'm taking the Giants, and sure enough, they win the damn thing outright, 23-16, keeping you perfect on the season. Kudos to you, sir.
Those seem to be the easy games that just jumped right off the page. Ron, I mean, I feel like it's not fair for me to take credit for a 2-0 week when you also went 2-0 this week. You saw the Cowboys laying 7 over the Broncos and said, no, take the Broncos. They probably don't even need the points. You are absolutely correct. Broncos winning 32-16. Then you saw the Rams laying 5.5 over the Titans. You sat there, scoffed. You know what? It is so impressive, your ability to just look at 16, 20 games and just say to yourself, this is a lock.
And a lot of people called me about that Dallas game. They said, Ron, Dallas is 7-0 against the spread this season. How can you bet against them? I'm like, if there's any time to bet against them, this is the week to do so. So that one I'll pat myself in the back a little bit for.
Listen, when you see Denver Broncos, I think of one thing, and that's Peyton Manning quarterbacking. So clearly it's what you should have done. Have you watched the Peyton and Eli ESPN Monday Night Football broadcast?
I have not, but I have heard it is very entertaining.
It's pretty entertaining. It's like you're watching the game with them. They don't fill it up with statistics. They're not talking about how many seconds the ball was in the air for. They literally are just sitting there shooting the shit while watching a game. So they'll talk about it. They'll make predictions of what they think the play is going to be, but then they'll just start rambling about things that have absolutely nothing to do with the football game that's going on. I actually find it more enjoyable than the regular broadcast.
All right. I'll have to check it out. That's Monday Night Football, you say?
Yes. Monday Night Football.
All right. Who are your picks this week, sir?
Oh, my picks this week. The Jets are terrible, so I'm going to stick with my anti-Jets bet. Bills laying 13.5 over the Jets. It won't even be that close. And then also, I think Green Bay's problems continue with Mr. Rodgers. I've got Seattle +5.5 over Green Bay.
All right. We got Tampa Bay going into Washington. Tom has always dominated the Washington football team. They're favored by 7.5. I'm taking those points. And then Arizona, again, a solid 8-1. They've got the Carolina Panthers coming in, not having a great season. Arizona -6. Take that all day long. And those are the locks of the week, Brian. And I just feel, I don't know, I don't want to jinx this, but I feel like another perfect week is coming up on us.
Listen, we've done it before. I don't see why we can't do it again.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, you know what else we need to do again? Unfortunately, we need to discuss our dead anti-vaxxers of the week.
Dead anti-vaxxer of the week.
So Brian, well, first this, and this is a first in the annals of the dead anti-vaxxers of the week. We have a little bit of a follow-up on dead anti-vaxxer of the week. Last week we discussed a gentleman by the name of Russ Dizdar, who had passed away from COVID. He was my anti-vaxxer of the week, and now they have doubled up because his wife Shelley, age 67, who was in the ICU last week when Russ passed away. She has also now succumbed to COVID-19. So Russ and Shelley Dizdar, both now dead from COVID, but they are not our dead anti-vaxxers of this week. Brian, who I say, are you bringing to the table?
Ron, I would like to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Ryan Vaughn.
Nope, that's not that one. Hold on. Let me find Brian Vaughn here.
What was that creepy photo?
That is for another another one that we will have shortly.
So do we have Ryan Vaughn? While you pull it, nope, that's also not Ryan Vaughn. Anyway, I'm going to start talking about him while you look for his photo.
I'll figure it out.
Ryan Vaughn was 24 years old, incredibly young, was a very, large poster on social media, constantly was posting about Texas's no mask rule. He was very much in favor of it, definitely posting against the current administration's handling of it. When the Baptist Memorial Healthcare Center announced that they were going to require all their employees back in August to get vaccinated, he posted that they were about to lose a lot of employees. Then less than a week later, he posted on August 19th, where can I go close to Florence to get a free COVID test? Apparently he wasn't feeling that well. 2 days later, he posted, never have I ever had shakes from a fever like this, can barely even hold my phone. This blank is no joke. Continued posting, asking people to pray for him. Stopped posting in September when his mother took over, asking for support. However, earlier this week on November 5th, Ryan succumbed to COVID.
Mm. Well, we are sorry to hear that. Very young, way too.
I wish Ryan was still with us,
but unfortunately, he is not. Brian, if I may bring to you my dead anti-vaxxer of the week, a gentleman by the name of Makan Singh Parhar, age 48, from Canada. He was a flat earther. Well, first he was a yoga instructor. Owned himself a yoga studio in Delta, British Columbia, was a flat earther. And then when COVID or convid, as he would call it, because it was a con, you know, it wasn't real.
Oh, very clever. Very clever.
So he said it didn't exist. He was heavy on the anti-vaxxer. He would do a number of live streams from his car, share a lot of anti-vaxxer memes. He was arrested for violating quarantine rules in Canada after returning from the U.S. Apparently on November 4th, died from blood clots due to COVID, leaving behind a wife and a child. So, Makan, we are sorry to say goodbye to you. And again, we'd love to say goodbye to this bit, but until until we can, we will bring you our dead anti-vaxxers of the week.
Dead anti-vaxxer of the week.
Ron?
Yes.
What are you watching?
Unfortunately, Christmas movies on the Hallmark Channel.
I was hoping to discuss Finch with you.
Oh, yes, we did watch the new Tom Hanks movie Finch on Apple TV Plus the other night. Yes. The premise of this movie is that Tom Hanks lives in a post-apocalyptic Earth. Apparently, solar flares have destroyed the ozone. And so he's like a tech guy, can build all kinds of machines and whatnot. And so he is dying of cancer, dying of radiation poisoning, I guess, and decides to build a robot to take care of his dog for him after he dies.
Really upbeat.
That's the premise.
Kind of thing.
Yes.
Really an upbeat story.
What did you think of it, Brian?
I felt that it was disappointing. I'm going to say that. I was expecting more. It literally felt like I had seen this movie before.
Yep.
It basically is man creating robot to interact with. And then it is about the robot developing a personality.
Right.
As it starts to explore the world. The only twist here was the dog.
Yes.
For what the movie was, which was
spoiler alert.
It literally is just, you know, it's not going to be a happy ending. You know, right. Tom Hanks is going to die in this movie because they have to show the robot taking care of the dog. So, you know, he's going to die. So if there's no reason why that movie was 2 hours long, there were just too many unnecessary scenes that didn't move the story forward, but simply were just, it was just filler, I guess. That whole thing where they were avoiding the car, you know, when they apparently came across somebody else that was, there was another human being that was alive. There was no point of that scene. It didn't help the story at all.
No, not at all. And the scene that I wished they would have shown is for the first time after Tom Hanks was dead and the robot actually encountered other humans to watch the humans beat the robot into pieces because they don't know what the hell it is. That only
happens in Philadelphia. Philadelphia beats the shit out of robots.
We beat a pitch bot. I know it. I remember. But yeah, because technically
that's one of my favorite Philadelphia stories.
Technically, the robot never learned how to defend himself.
Is that in Canada, they brought this little fake robot from one end of Canada all the way to the other with people bringing it, like wherever they were going, putting it down. And then somebody else would pick it up and bring it across. Canada brought it across its entire country.
It made it through New York, even.
It made it through New York. It got to Philadelphia, and the Philadelphia residents literally ripped it to shreds.
Beat it to death. Just literally beat it to death.
Oh, do I love Philadelphia.
I would like the Hitchbot movie. I want Tom Hanks to star in
that. That's a movie I would watch. I would love to see a movie where it's about that. I would love to see who they would cast as the person that rips it apart.
Let's see. What other stories do we have before we get out of
here? Oh, you know what I also started watching?
What's that?
I forgot the name of it. Bill Burr has a new show.
Yes.
On Immoral Compass.
Yes.
On the Roku channel, which apparently I can get without having to have a Roku.
I meant to mention to you that I watched, I think, the first two episodes.
I also watched the first two.
They're short. They're what, 10?
7 minutes. Movies? Yeah, this was originally supposed to be on Quibi, which was it came and gone with it just a couple months. But the whole idea there was that it was going to be these little short stories.
Right.
So they were filmed for that. And apparently he was able to keep the rights to it and market it to sold it to Roku or whatnot. Really enjoying it. Dark humor.
It started off well because the Nick Swardson one was the first one, correct?
Oh God, it was so to start off with. I mean, just dark humor,
right? And I don't know that the other ones after that were as good as that. I mean, they were good, but that one just like it set the tone for what you were going to expect. Yeah. And we have to tell them the story. Spoiler alert if you're going to miss. But so basically, Nick Swardson is having sex with his wife. And she says, you can finish wherever you want. And he's like, really? She's like, yeah, come wherever you want. He hops out of bed, runs across the bedroom, and comes all over a photo of his wife's mother. Which you think is bad enough. So obviously she kicks him out of the house.
She throws him out. She's like, get the fuck out of this room right now.
He goes downstairs to leave, and you find out that it's the mother's funeral and the coffin is there in the house.
Yes.
Which, again, dark to begin with, and then just ends so even darker.
So dark. I highly recommend it. There were a couple others that I just don't remember right now. There was one with a squeaky chair.
Yeah.
With Mary Lynn Reitz-Cobb, that I didn't even understand the ending to. Like, does she send the chair back? Does she send the child back?
What the premise is there was, and I think we talked about it like a year or so ago. There was a conspiracy theory going around that you could order furniture off of Wayfair, but it was like ridiculously overpriced. And the reason for that was it was a child trafficking ring. And you would get a child delivered. So I think it was a play on that. And yeah, the thing was, you know, she rescued the kid, but then the chair was still squeaky. So she sent the kid and the chair back.
I don't get, why would she send the kid back?
Well, she shouldn't, because she's rescued her from child slavery, but that's kind of the joke. Yeah. Like, now I got to return because it said on the box, it said return entire contents for refund. So she was like,
Okay. That one went over my head.
But
the Nick Swardson thing did not go over my head.
So
that I appreciated greatly. Compass,
we would recommend that.
There you go. I enjoyed it. And I will. And it's only like 6 short episodes. You're literally talking about a half an hour at most of your life. Well worth it. Highly recommend.
So this story we wanted to cover because we feel this man is a hero. A man by the name of John Eisenman. Washington State father who killed his daughter's 19-year-old boyfriend for selling her into a sex trafficking ring. We do have a photo of the father and his underage daughter. We should emphasize, I think she was 15 or 16. So allegedly, the boyfriend, let me see if I can find the boyfriend's name here. I can't find his name at the moment, but
it's not important. He's a piece of shit.
So allegedly the boyfriend for $1,000 gave the daughter to a sex trafficking ring. John Eisenman, the father, manages to find his daughter, but also find the boyfriend. And I think the only thing he could have done was beat the 19-year-old boyfriend to death with a cinder block.
Yes.
So
this man needs to be rewarded, not punished.
So he has been charged with first degree murder. He is being held on $1 million bond. But yes, the man, in our opinion, hero. Would you go hero?
I say hero. He is as much of a hero as I was for donating convalescent plasma a year ago.
All right. I believe John Eisenman's stepdaughter has started a GoFundMe to help raise money for legal fees. So maybe we will share that on the social media in case people want to donate and help this hero. I mean, you got to think the courts show him some leniency. I mean, again, you know,
I'm surprised they're going after him for murder. Like, those are some pretty serious charges.
I mean, unfortunately, because he planned it out so methodically, you can't do anything but charge him with first degree murder. Like, it was clearly premeditated. But again, I think, you know, hopefully they provide him some sort of plea bargain or something that will, you know,
I would hope so.
You know, Because again,
he does not deserve to be in prison.
No, there's so many mitigating circumstances.
Yeah.
Let's see what else happened. Do you understand what happened at this Astroworld festival where eight people were apparently trampled to death?
Yes.
Tell me.
People went to a concert. Okay. People do drugs at these concerts. From what the stories that I have read, I do not know anybody that attended Astroworld, but apparently what happened was people started to push forward. People fell. People got stepped on because people were not considerate of those that had fallen. Okay. There were stories that a security guard was stuck in the neck by a needle. Mm. And apparently, the story is now being making the rounds that somebody was going around with a hypodermic needle and pricking people with it so that they could inject drugs into them. Hmm.
That part seems a little out there for me.
I don't know anyone that goes around just giving away drugs to total strangers.
But apparently
I don't believe that story.
Which I don't know. I mean, there are some twisted people out there, so maybe that's the case.
But I think the biggest outrage over this, and listen, people have died at concerts in the past. This isn't the first time something of this has happened. I think the real anger here from the populace is that the concert continued. That there was at one point an ambulance drove onto the grounds, which was clearly visible from the stage. And the concert never was interrupted to say, hey, is everybody all right out there?
Yeah.
The concert just kept going.
There is video of, the ambulance in the crowd and Travis Scott performing on stage and doing the robot at the same time.
Yeah, that's there's going to be some lawsuits. It's just clear. Yeah. And not only that, were the eight people dead, but there's like dozens of people that needed to be hospitalized.
Yes. And they're also, what's also drawing some people's anger are people that are now trying to push the conspiracy theory that the reason people died at the festival is because they were vaccinating people. Because there was obviously a booth there allowing people to be vaccinated or get information on vaccination.
No.
Segment of the population is like, they're trying to tell you it's cardiac arrest. But no, it's the jab, man. It's the jab.
Oh, that's such bullshit.
Yeah.
Oh, we live in this is like the worst times.
The only thing crazier than that were the QAnon followers who gathered in Dallas this week, expecting the arrival of John F. Kennedy Jr. If you're saying, wait a minute, didn't John F. Kennedy Jr. crash his plane and die? Yeah, that was 1999. That was a while ago.
Wow.
And it wasn't a small gathering. I mean, there were a lot of people at the AT&T Discovery Plaza in downtown Dallas anticipating that JFK Jr. were coming back, some wearing shirts that said Trump JFK Jr. 2024, just a whole lot of crazy. And shockingly enough, no JFK Jr. showed up.
I don't understand it. I don't understand the thought process of these QAnon people. I mean, I know we've joked about it for a year now. It's not funny anymore.
No.
That people literally believed that John F. Kennedy Jr., who died in a plane crash 30 years ago, 25, maybe 20.
22.
That he is going to show up to the place where his father was murdered and come back alive, first off, more importantly on that one. Mm. So that he could come back and announce that he is Donald Trump's vice president, and somehow he's going to guide Trump back into the White House.
Right.
At this point, it's like a roulette wheel of different events that are going to happen that you just they're just slapping them together.
Right. Senator Chris Murphy from Tennessee tweeted, "The very large crowd gathered to see JFK Jr. reveal himself after his fake death isn't funny. It's a deeply worrying sign of how unhinged our political conversation has become from truth." And that is
better said. He said it better than I did.
Spot on.
Spot on.
All right. Well, we are just about to wrap up here this week. Exciting news for next week's show. We will have a special guest. We haven't done an interview on the podcast in a while, but next week joining us will be friend of the podcast, Dave Hill. He obviously performed in my backyard a couple of weeks ago, put on a great show. Personally, I felt it was it was a really good time. And he has been gracious enough to say that he will come on and spend a little time with us here on the podcast. So that will be next Sunday night, as always, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. In the meantime, we are preparing to go do our After Dark show for our Patreon subscribers. And what's that? You're not a Patreon subscriber? Brian, how can someone become a Patreon subscriber to the Ron and Brian podcast?
Go to our website, ronandbrianpodcast.com. Go to the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. Click the link that says Patreon. Go to patreon.com. Register with patreon.com. Go to our page, which is patreon.com/Ron and Brian podcast. Sign up. It's a couple dollars a month. We have various levels of support. Each level comes with a different set of rewards. The biggest reward right off the bat is you get 30 plus minutes of exclusive content that we do every week. It's behind the paywall. So this way, it's the type of stories that aren't meant for everyone. It's the weird, it's the sexy, it's the spicy, not like Ron's beer. But it is, it's the, and I think I'm comfortable saying it. I feel a little bit more comfortable exposing things about myself behind the paywall that I would not do on this podcast. So it's not just bonus content, but it gets pretty good.
Right. I agree.
And it also, just a couple bucks a month, you know, depending on how generous you feel, you're helping us offset some of the costs of this show. This banner below, what do we say? 75 cents every time we use it.
Yes. It's money out of our pocket.
It adds up. This logo up here, you know how much that we pay $100 every episode we use that. That was trademarked by a graphic designer in Taiwan who literally sends us a royalty bill every time we put it up. The show does cost money. So it helps us not be poor.
In hindsight, we probably shouldn't have signed some of these deals, but it is what it is. We're
teachable moment. It's a teachable moment. We did not know at the time that that's what we should have done. I thought I was helping a young artist.
No, I listen. Your heart was in the right place. That's all you can
Thank
say.
You.
Thank all you. All right, man. Are we ready to wrap this up and get ready for After Dark?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us this week. Patreon folks, we'll see you in a few minutes. Everybody else, we will see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Ron and Brian podcast. We're live each week on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can find prior episodes, links to our social media, and everything else Ron and Brian at ronandbrianpodcast.com. See you again next week.